Welcome to the Grappling Discourse Podcast. Today, we will be talking about all things ADCC. I'm going to talk about my experience. I'm going to talk about the rule set, where I think ADCC really needs to change some things. I'm going to talk about how our competitors did and just the weekend as a whole. Now, first, I want to give a huge shout out to those of you that came up to me. I had three or four of you come up to me and introduce yourselves and say you were fans of the podcast, and that meant a lot to me. I really appreciate the kind words. I asked each of you what your favorite episode or types of episodes are, and all of you said the storytelling episodes. Just anytime I tell a story, whether it's the history about the history of jiu-jitsu, the history of a movement, the history of an organization, beef between teams, just anytime I get in and tell a story. So I'm going to try to do more of that. Got into Vegas Friday night at 11 p.m. and I did a really poor job eating wise. I had been eating super clean to try and limit the inflammation in my lower back. I was really worried about the lower back, and so I did a bunch of things the week leading up to ADCC. I was stretching 2 hours every day. I didn't work out. I didn't do jiu-jitsu. I was eating super clean, and by Friday I felt really good, and I was very pleased about that. I wanted to work out, but I was like, that would be so stupid. Let's just take the weekend off, get to ADCC, take care of the body, do your thing there, and then we'll get started next week. But I also was really worried about eating. I didn't want to eat really processed foods. I didn't want to eat fast food on Friday. I wanted to really eat clean, and so I fasted all day. And my plan was, once I got to Vegas, I was like, look, there are going to be tons of restaurants open. It's Vegas. The city never sleeps. There will be tons of options, and I'll get something really good to eat there. I'll Uber Eats or Grubhub it in, eat, and then go right to sleep. Well, like I said, I got in at 11 p.m., and I didn't know how early ADCC started. In my mind, ADCC was going to start at noon. And I completely forgot about the time change, because when I've watched the trials in the past, yeah, they were starting at noon, I thought. And so I was thinking, okay, I'll have time to like sleep in, and I'm sure the athletes will still be up. But I took an Uber, got to the place we were staying, the Airbnb, and everyone was asleep but one person. And so I kind of felt like an asshole. I mean, I know I couldn't really control when my airplane got there. There's not a lot of options flying out of Huntsville. And everything was pretty much getting in super late on Friday. And I actually took the flight that got in earlier. There was a flight that got in at 12:30. I believe Brandon took that flight. But I got in at 11, got to the place at 11:20, but everybody was already in bed. And I was like, man, I kind of feel like an asshole. I don't want to like cause a bunch of commotion. I don't want to call in Uber Eats at this time. Like, the athletes are trying to sleep. Let's just wind down. Let's skip the day. We've done a bunch of fasts in the past. We'll just call it for today. We'll wake up. We'll get something to eat before the event. So I wake up, and like I said, I didn't realize how early it was. I asked the person that was up. His name's Grayson. He does a lot of camera work for Keelan, Brandon, and he films a lot for Travis. So he was there filming for Travis. And he was like, yeah, we need to wake up at like 7:30. And I was like, oh, man, this is going to be a rough night. So I didn't sleep very well, haven't eaten, wake up at 7:30. I probably got 3 hours of sleep. And we head to the venue. Now, I had some predictions in my head about who the athletes were going to be facing, and I was really thinking about Travis, and I thought Travis, and me and him talked about this the day before, and even that morning we were talking, and I was like, man, I have a feeling you're going to run into Jacob Rodriguez today. And Jacob Rodriguez is a guy that I feel like Travis matches up really well with. Travis has 7 losses in competition now. His record's like 52-7, I think, as a grappler. So it's very, very good, not counting some of the draws he's gotten. And all 7 of those losses have come by leg lock. And J-Rod doesn't do any leg locks. he really relies on that as his athleticism. I don't find him to be the most technical grappler. Again, I think he relies a lot on his athleticism, and I just feel like Travis matches up really well, and I think Travis is probably a better athlete than J-Rod. And so I was looking for Travis to have kind of a breakout moment this weekend, and I figured getting a match with J-Rod and beating him would be exactly what he needed to really announce his presence on this stage. But yeah, the brackets weren't released until an hour before the event. So the brackets drop, and lo and behold, Travis has J-Rod in the third round. So Travis received a bye. And his first match was against a 37-year-old white belt. We looked him up, and he was a 37-year-old white belt. He had two matches on smooth comp, and he was like 1-1 and like at an intermediate division at Naga. And so we felt really good. We're like, look, we're going to crush this dude. It'll be a great warm-up match. J-Rod, I'm sure, will win his match, and then we'll have J-Rod. And we were super excited, pumped about it. And like I said, we just kind of both had been envisioning it and kind of making it come to fruition. And I really thought that, like, worst case scenario, it's a super entertaining match, and it's one of the matches of the day on Saturday. Nakia had a great draw as well. So Nakia had a girl that I wasn't aware of. I believe she was a brown belt. I can't remember where she was out of. And then her second round match was looking like it was going to be against a black belt who's been in the game a very, very long time. But I figured Nakia had a pretty big positional advantage over this person. Like, this person's more of like a sub-only grappler. And so I felt really good about hers. And then Nick had a match against a guy who I had known. Like, he was a local guy. He's out of Henzo Gracie, Nashville. And I've seen him compete a few times, and I've seen him get leg locked a couple of times. And so I figured Nick had a pretty big advantage in that match going in. And the game plan in that match was to try and get underneath and get a leg. So an hour before, again, coaches are all kind of scrambling. We're looking at the brackets. We're trying to map it out for our athletes. Nakia had to win two matches. Travis had to win two matches. And Nick had to win three matches to make it to day two. Now, Nick had, like I said, he had a purple belt from Henzo Nashville. And then his next match would have been against Keith Krikorian. And Keith is, he's a legend. He's one of the best five guys in the world at that weight class. Just won the Polaris title. And this is Nick's really kind of first time on this stage. You know, he did the East Coast trials, but yeah, he doesn't have much experience, and he's a pretty relatively new grappler. He's been training right around 3 years. He and Travis have been training right about the same amount of time. And so for these guys, especially Nick, it was like, man, let's win this first match and then let's go and see how you do against one of the best in the world. It's a great opportunity for purple belts to go out there and just see where they stand against the best. Well, 10 minutes before the event, they announced that they're changing the brackets. And I'm like, oh no, because a bunch of people, I guess, didn't show up. And so they were kind of doing a last minute adjustment. And they didn't change Nakia's bracket or Nick's bracket very much, but they completely changed the under 88 kilogram division, Travis's division. So Travis went from getting a bye in the first round to then facing a 37-year-old white belt, and then hopefully facing against J-Rod, the one match we really, really wanted, to having a really tough first-round match against a brown belt from B-Team. And if he won that, he was going to have Ryan Aiken. And Ryan Aiken is also one of the top guys. So he's a top 15 in the world at under 88. Maybe even higher, just depending on who you ask, you know. But he's a top grappler. He's phenomenal. And he's definitely one of the favorites to win it all. East Coast Trials was won by Jacob Couch. And Jacob Couch had lost to Ryan Aiken a month before the East Coast Trials. So Ryan was capable. He's got a win over Jacob Couch. He is one of the five or so guys that everyone's looking at that they could win this division. Now with Ryan, though, I knew that was like one of the top seeds that I was hoping we could avoid, because Ryan is one of the best leg lockers at that weight division. And like I already said, Travis has a weakness for leg locks. And so I was kind of like, oh man, like that definitely makes things harder. But I still figured, I was like, man, if we can just get to overtime, I feel like Travis has an athleticism and wrestling advantage. And I definitely think we can upset Ryan if we can get it there. Now, the way ADCC did things this weekend was they went through, on the first day, they went through each bracket and got it to the point where they were going to move on to day two. And then they moved on to the next. And they actually started the day off with the under 88 kilogram division. And so Travis got to kind of start the day off, and he had a really good match against this brown belt from B Team. And it was pretty cool, because you're going against one of the best teams in the world, a guy representing one of the best teams in the world, Nicky Ryan's in his corner, and Travis dominates this dude. I believe he wins like 8-0, but he passed his guard a bunch of times, just was completely dominant, controlled every second of the match, was never in any danger, mounted, and yeah, he scored 8 points. And ADCC, like if you're scoring over 6 points, that's a lot of points. When you're starting to get to that 6, 8, especially anything 10 or over, that's a pretty big win. And so, yeah, it was a dominant victory for Travis. And Ryan won his match, and so now we know we're going against Ryan Aiken. And Travis's big weakness is going too far forward. He has no patience. And so even though we had been really game planning and drilling, I'd been really having the guys work on their patience, but it was funny, you know, because I was having these guys do live drilling, but a lot of the time the intention was to play a conservative game, to play more tactical, to not go for the submission. And when I'd watch them do these drills, or when I'd watch them do these live goes with that in mind, most of them just completely struggled. And a lot of them, after about 30 seconds, that just completely went out the window. And it's really tough when you're taking athletes that are colored belts, particularly purple belt and above, and you're trying to change their strategy going into competition. You're trying to change the way they roll. It takes a very, very long time. And especially athletes that have been successful. And Travis obviously has a very, very successful record. He's coming off a bunch of really good tournaments or competitions where he's had gotten really good results. And so, yeah, it is really tough to like get him to change the way that he's grappling, especially for one match. But with Ryan, I was really hoping, I was figuring Ryan was going to pull guard. And I knew, I mean, Sean's one of the best coaches in the country, and he's very well aware of Travis. He's watched Travis compete a bunch, and he knows, like, hey, one weakness, especially a big weakness, like a big strength their team has over our team, 10th Planet Decatur, that 10th Planet Atlanta has, is the leg lock, particularly that outside leg lock. And our guys have had trouble with their guys in the past just in those entanglements. And it's the one area that, again, I think their team has a big, big advantage over ours. And so I was like, Travis, we've got to avoid passing on the knees. We've got to avoid the butter half. We've got to avoid the outside leg positions. But I also don't want Travis competing scared. You know, when you're talking about the one movement that he's been tapped in the past, it can really get in the athlete's head, and then they can play almost too conservative where they're not willing to pull the trigger because they're worried about getting beat. So I wanted him to stay loose, and I wanted him to do what he does, and I think that's why a lot of people like watching him compete and like watching him train and roll and everything, is because he's super creative and he's very unorthodox. And I didn't want to take that away. And again, watching him in training, I see how hard it is for him to kind of pull back. For him to play very like strategic and kind of play on the outside and really play, I don't want to say stalling, but just a very cagey type game. And so I kind of just let him go out there. And, you know, while I was kind of in his ear, I kind of let him do his thing. And they had a great match. Match starts off. Travis actually tries like a flying triangle. So Ryan sits and Travis tries that like flying triangle over the top. of his guard. Kind of catches Ryan by surprise, but he does a great job, defends. He kind of like repels Travis. Travis bounces off. Travis tries to pass, and he had a couple, two really good looks at a reverse body lock pass from the butter half. And that's the issue, you know, is Travis has really good passing from the butter half position. And so he's really comfortable there. And he likes using this reverse body lock pass. It's a pass that I've seen, the first time I'd ever seen it be done, I saw Andrew Wiltsy do it. I also saw Rafael Lovato, I'm pretty sure, do it to Boogie Martinez in a super fight they had a long time ago. But Travis is super good. He's got super good balance, and he's got super long arms. And, man, when he gets that reverse body lock, it's like it's impossible. And he had two really good looks at it. But Ryan ends up getting him into a leg lock, and Ryan gets him pretty deep. And Travis defended beautifully that first one. Defended, put a lot of weight on Ryan, kind of had a look at the back, was like trying to climb up the back. But Ryan's so good in that outside Aussie position that, I mean, yeah, that back take was going to be tough. And a lot of people, Travis probably would have taken the back, but Ryan was one of the best in the world at that outside Aussie position. But Travis just ends up freeing the knee line, and he ends up on his butt. So he frees the knee line, but Ryan uses it to sweep. 45 seconds to points. And Ryan passes Travis pretty quickly, actually, with the knee slice. But Travis is super comfortable off his back. And he actually ended up reversing Ryan, and he swept Ryan right before points started. So now 20 seconds until points, Travis is on top. He ends up trying to pass, but see, he had a little bit of success. He escaped one of the leg locks. He got a reversal, and then he just went too far forward. And I almost wish I just would have been like, hey, like, let's just take the next minute or two to like really probe the guard, really stay on the feet. But he ended up going, he tried another like reverse body lock pass, and I can't remember exactly how Ryan entered, but essentially he entered in again, outside heel hook, and this time Travis made a poor movement. He ended up belly down. When you're belly down and that heel's exposed, so your heel's essentially facing the ceiling, it's like impossible to hide your heel. And so Travis got tapped right at, I think like with 2 minutes left. So it was a 4 minute match, four-ish so minute match, maybe a little longer, maybe a little bit less. Travis did some great things, and he got exposed again in his one weak area. But this is what I told Travis. I said, look, first, dominated one of B-Teen's brown belts with Nicky Ryan in the corner. That's huge. I mean, dominated, looked amazing. Second, think about your first time you got heel hooked. Who was the first person that heel hooked you? It was this random blue belt it wasn't even a good leg lock. And I was like, just think about the people that have leg locked you. The people that are leg locking you now, like with Ryan, he's one of the best in the world. It's not the same. Like, it's not like when you got heel hooked your first time. So you are improving defensively. You escaped the first heel hook against one of the best guys in the world. And that's like one of his best things. And so you're making improvements. But you see, if you give a guy 2, 3, 4 looks, like eventually, and that's his A game, like you're going to get beat right there. But he kind of felt Ryan, and he could feel like, man, I can beat, like, I think in his mind, he's like, I can beat this guy, you know, under different circumstances, in a different rule set, and especially if he played a little more cage, he's like, man, if I could have just got to overtime, I feel like I was a little more explosive, I think I could have maybe pulled it off. But Ryan he's kind of like a leader in the Southeast, man. He's definitely the best competitor 10th Planet has to offer east of the Mississippi and probably one of the top three in the whole system. He's a guy that a lot of our guys kind of look up to because he has won a combat jiu-jitsu world title. He has done a lot of things, and he's always so nice to our guys. He always hangs out and chats afterwards. And so he's definitely a guy that we respect, and we definitely want to have a match again in the near future. And that's the cool thing about Travis, is he's always like, man, I want to get after him again. I want to have another match with Ryan. But it was a good experience for Travis. And I'm really thinking like, man, if we could just continue improving the leg lock defense, keep getting better wrestling, and just get better tactically. And that's something I'm going to talk about here in a second, what I think the whole team learned. But yeah, I think that's the big takeaway from Travis. Now, Nick, going against a guy from Henzo, Nashville, and this guy was absolutely jacked. Every single person that watched the match said they just couldn't believe they were in the same weight division. I mean, this guy looked 20 pounds bigger than Nick. Super jacked, super ripped. And he's a guy that, like I said, he's from the local area, and he's competed against a bunch of our guys in the heavier weight divisions. I've never seen him compete below 170, I don't think. I've seen him in a couple super fights, and he was always at 170. And so I don't know how the hell this dude made 145, but he did. And he did not look it. He looked, again, a weight class bigger. He looked bigger than a lot of the 170-pounders. But still, going into that match, we felt pretty confident. And the big thing with Nick was like, hey, let's get underneath. Let's get into the leg locks, 50-50, any of them. Nick's very, very good leg locker. He's really improved his own leg lock defense, particularly the counter leg locks, because that's where he'd been beaten in the past. And I've been watching him a ton, and his leg lock defense has gotten so good. He's been working a lot on just slipping the heels and just taking better care of his own legs. And I was really excited to see him. I was hoping he got into a 50-50 shootout with somebody, because I've just seen the work he's been putting in, and I really felt confident that he was going to smoke whoever, you know, he got there. So the match started. Nick pulls guard. Doesn't really have a connection, but pulls guard. And he just, I think he started off too lack, like he was just lackadaisical. He was kind of playing a little too sub only. And so he's kind of like started off, and he kind of did like a little half inversion, and his opponent just had more intensity. He ended up getting underneath and kind of just forcing a stacked pass 30 seconds in, and he passed Nick pretty quickly. I can't remember if Nick recovered and then got passed again, but he ended up getting his back taken pretty early in the match. And Nick defended great. He was never in any danger, but this guy just put in a body triangle, had double underhooks most of the time. I know one time he went for a choke, but it wasn't close, and Nick did a great job defending. He's super, super tough. His defense is on point. But yeah, this guy just like held on, and he ended up scoring like a minute in. I mean, he held Nick's back for like 3 minutes. And what's cool and also kind of annoying about this the ADCC rule is that you can continue to rack up points on the back if you just take the hook out real quick, let it out for 3 seconds, and then put back in the body triangle or switch body triangles, you get 3 more points. And so his opponent ended up scoring 3. Like, he took the back before points, but he ended up I think Nick like almost escaped one time, and then his opponent re-got the back, and Nick ended up giving 3. Now, his opponent did a great job, just played super tactically. Nick ended up escaping with like 40 seconds left, got on top. But by then, it's like, and it's something we had talked a lot about, like, man, if you give up 3 points in this turn, if you give up points, it's almost impossible to come back and win. It's just very, very difficult, especially in a situation like this where you've been on defense most of the match and somebody's had your back for 3+ minutes, and now you're just escaping. You're way out of rhythm. You've had to work really hard to get out. Essentially now, I mean, 3 points, because even you would have to either pass the guard for 3 points or take the back. Couldn't just get a takedown. So if his opponent stood up and Nick got a takedown, it would only be 2 points. So he needed a guard pass. He needed a back take. But I was like, man, the best bet was to get a leg lock. He shot a leg lock. His opponent did a great job, just kind of disengaged and just played super tactical, just played away, played it super safe, and got the win 3-0. And I think Nick really kind of showcased me, like, he is a very, very good sub-only grappler. But I think especially ADCC is a rule set that he needs a little bit more seasoning. Really needs to like improve just the kind of the intensity, and the like, I'm super confident if somebody passes Nick guard that he's going to get his guard back. Or again, a situation like he ends up deep with his back taken. But he is, I think, a little too okay with being like put in those positions. He's a little too okay with, getting his guard passed, or because he's just so confident in his defense. But it kind of bit him in the butt this weekend. And yeah, I'll be interested to see how Nick develops from this, because it wasn't excuse me, Sorry about that. So it wasn't like he got dominated, like destroyed and beat 10-0. It was just he gave up an early pass, back got taken, body triangle, double unders, super hard to escape, and then only had 30 seconds to left to make something happen. And it was just a tough way to lose. I think on another weekend, or just kind of with even maybe a different mentality, I know he can beat that guy. And I know Nick's a problem at 66. He's had some great performances. I'll be interested to see how he comes out of this. And I think he just needs to put a little bit more work into the point, just like scoring points and like really just playing point grappling before the next ADCC. Now, Nakia looked incredible. Nakia absolutely dominated her first match. She did a sequence that we've been working a lot on. So she got to the half guard, dominated the hips. So something we talked a lot about, just like staying back, dominating the hips, not forcing the overhooks, not getting too far forward. She ended up winning double unders. She passed right the half guard right into the mount. She was winning like 6-0. She actually finished with a mounted armbar triangle. Beautiful. Just absolutely dominant. Next match, going against a very seasoned black belt, a girl that's been a black belt for quite a long time. Now, I know she's jumped around to different teams. She's got a very unorthodox name. Her name is Nikki Sullivan. And Nikki started off down there with like Joe Bays and that team in Kentucky. And then I believe she moved to Atos. It was at Atos for a while, but I believe now she has her own gym. And I think it might be in Colorado. Might be completely wrong, but she's competed a lot of EBIs. And I think she's done CJJ a couple times as well for the females. But she's an OG. I mean, me and her were, I want to say we were the same, like purple belts. Back when I was a purple, I think she was a purple belt as well. And she's really known for her closed guard and her knee bars and toe holds. But I figured Nakai would have a huge wrestling advantage and a huge positional advantage. I knew she was going to pull guard. But one of the biggest things I told Nakai is like, do not let her get close. Do not let her jump guard. Keep her at a distance. Just don't run in and try to get under hooks, because she's going to take an overhook and jump. Let her pull guard, and then we're going to work on the outside, win inside space, and pass. Well, the match was going amazing, and Nakia was all over and really dominating the match. She almost took Nikki's back two different times. And when points started, she was in on an arm triangle Rutolo team, and she was trying to take the back, and Nikki just did something super weird. She was like grabbing her foot. She was just doing some like really unorthodox things, and she did a great job defending the points. But yeah, Nakai was smashing her and was all over her. And with just under a minute left, Nakia ended up getting a body lock and forced Nikki into a position where like Nakia had a body lock and she was passing around the side. Well, Nikki did a great job and she built base back up to her turtle. And this is where Nakia made her big mistake, is Nakia tried to chase the back from there. And Nikki, as I said, she's super good at toe holds and knee bars. And so she's really good at that victor roll underneath. And so even though she didn't leg lock Nakia, she used it. And as Nakia tried to chase the back, Nikki ended up winning hips on top of hips. And so she got her hips on top of Nakia and ended up getting on top. And now Nakia's on bottom, even though she has the body lock, but now she's basically just holding on. And Nikki ends up kind of like getting like a cradle-ish position. And she ended up scoring with like 20 seconds left. So it went from a match that we were dictating the whole time. Nakia almost took the back multiple times, has a body lock, passes around the side. So she was past the guard, but Nikki did a great job of getting up into the turtle and rolling underneath. And because Nakia was too far forward and was trying to take the back at just the wrong time, she ended up on bottom of that situation and ends up losing with like 20 seconds left. And it was just one of those, like, Nakia, when I watch like her grapple, she is so much better than almost all these girls she grapples, even loses to. And I know that sounds crazy. sounds like I'm being a hater. Like, oh, your student lost. Like, how can you say she's better? Just go watch the footage of Nakia grapple. Watch what she does to these girls. When you watch what she does, I mean, if Nakia was competing at the heavy division, like she was just heavier. She just had an extra 40, 50, 60 pounds. If she was 200-plus pound dude like that had Nakia's game, she would be one of the, like, she would always win. I think she's just a little too light. So she plays this smash pass game, but she was 120 pounds. Like, that's the weight division she competed at. And I'm just thinking in this situation where she's got the body lock, you know, like if she was Nicky Rod and she had that weight, like Nikki Sullivan wouldn't have got up, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, anyways, just go and watch the foot. Nakia destroys, and she'll lose by like 10 to, you know, 30 second ride time in EBIOT, even though she dominated in regulation. Or she'll lose these like overtime ref decisions, even though she was on top and never in any danger and just forcing the pass all the time. Or she lost last ADCC trials because to Trinity Pine, and that match didn't make sense. But she just is on top, dominating, not getting swept, not getting, like, for most of the match, but she just loses in, like, makes these little mistakes to lose right at the end. And she is so close, in my opinion, to being the best. Being the person that wins and just wins consistently and dominantly. And she really is in kind of this B-team funk of, like, always like coming short. You know, she has a ton of silver medals, and then obviously this time, you know, she ended up losing in the second round. But yeah, it's like, I don't know, it's just super frustrating. It's one of those things where it's like there's really not even a lot to correct, you know. It's something we've talked a lot about because that was a mistake. She likes to chase the back, and so she does sometimes get a little far forward, and she has been rolled before there. But it's hard to tell somebody, like, we had a huge wrestling advantage, but it's hard to tell her, like, hey, there's 30 seconds left. You've got a body lock and you're passing her on the side. Like, let's disengage so we can get to the we can get to overtime and wrestle. But tactically, it's maybe something. I probably should have said that. Probably should have. Now, I think that's the biggest thing. I'm hoping that these guys learned, and I definitely learned myself. And I was already pretty aware of it, but like being there live and just watching the matches, tactics are everything. And so many people won matches just being really smart and just winning a real good tactical, or just playing a really good tactical game and beating somebody they weren't supposed to beat. I mean, Chris Wojcik beat Ryan Aiken, and he barely did any jiu-jitsu. I mean, he just got into overtime. When it was an overtime, he took like three shots, and Ryan defended every single shot, but they ended up giving the match to Chris Wojcik. And it wasn't the worst by any means. I'm going to talk about that in a second, about how crappy I think ADCC rules are and just how open to interpretation and how much human error plays a part in who wins some of these matches. But I mean, I thought Ryan won that match. Again, it wasn't the worst, not even close to the worst call of the weekend, but they ended up giving it to Chris just because they said he initiated a little bit more and that he was the one that took the shot. So even though Ryan defended, and twice I think Ryan went around and was behind Chris, he didn't end up taking the back. But I don't know. I mean, I understand. I know Ryan wasn't happy about that loss, and I totally get it. I mean, I think a lot of people, if you just watch the match, you'd be like, I think Ryan won. But anyways, there were so many matches that were won where the guy didn't score, they didn't have any submission attempts, they didn't do anything. And I just had, like, the athletes watch, and I was like, look, watch that match, or just watch it. You see what happened there? That guy won. He didn't pass the guard. He didn't even really try to pass. It's so important for 80. You have to play that game. If you're just expecting to go out there and sub everybody 6-for-6, I mean, yes, it happens every now and again, but most people that win, win with tactics, especially if they're not the better competitor or the better, like, guy. They put themselves in the best positions to win. And I think that's something that, again, our team could do a lot better of. We got to stop thinking so much about sub only. Because even Travis, after his first match, even though he looked awesome and dominant, he was like, man, I just didn't feel like I did very good because I didn't get the sub. And I'm like, we got to stop thinking like that. It's a 6-minute match. You're not always going to get the sub in a 6-minute match. It's not like you guys rolled for an hour and you didn't get any subs. It's like you dominated for 6 minutes and you had some good looks, but you didn't force anything. And you didn't take any chances and you won. You know, Now, the viewing, the actual experience being there, I was actually shocked how much I enjoyed Sunday. Saturday was exhausting, you know, just going around and trying to help the athletes and just kind of feeling like I was running around with my it's like chicken with their head cut off, where I was like here and there, and then I was kind of running into people that I knew, and it was just like, hey, what's up, you know, and you'd have these little conversations, and you would try and find a mat, or you try to find the warm-up area, or you need to go get water, whatever, right? I was just super, super busy Saturday. I didn't get to really enjoy it. And then when all the athletes, my athletes were kind of done, we didn't get any good seats, and so I couldn't really even see the mat. So I barely watched any matches on Saturday. Sunday, however, get back, and we got really good seats Sunday. Brandon and Lindsay got there early, and they saved a couple of us seats, and so we had a nice row of like 6-7 people, and we were in perfect position to watch all the matches. And man, yeah, I really enjoyed being there. I'm typically not one to like go to live sporting events. I would much rather watch at home or like watch on like my phone or TV or whatever. But I don't know. I enjoyed it a lot, and it actually makes me want to go to the championships this upcoming ADCC championships in I think it's in August. Yeah, in Vegas, because yeah, it was really cool. Like the atmosphere was super cool, just the energy. And seeing it live, it was definitely very, very cool. It was the first time I'd been back to ADCC since I competed all the way back in, what was that, 2014 in West Virginia? So, yeah, 10 years ago. Crazy. Now, the rule set, though. Guys, I cannot tell you how many poor calls I saw, and you know how many people I overheard talking about the rule set or asking questions about it or not understanding why points were called or why points weren't called, and they just need to change something. It is a flawed rule set. It just leads to controversy. I feel like there's just a couple of really minor changes they could make that would change everything. But it just seems like the refs and the judges have so much control on what, like who wins. And I saw multiple scenarios where points should have been given, and for whatever reason, points were not given. And what's so funny is like there's a lot of dorks in jiu-jitsu, right? There's a lot of people that love watching jiu-jitsu, that have watched all the ADCCs, that like to think they know the rule set and everything. And I was sitting around a bunch of those people. I was sitting around multiple certified ADCC refs. I was sitting next to multiple people that have been training a decade plus. I was sitting around multiple athletes that competed at ADCC. And it was hilarious to hear people arguing about why there should or shouldn't have been, like, hey, how come points weren't called there? There'd be like three or four people like, man, that doesn't make sense. Points, but it should be points. And there'd be times the crowd would be chanting points, points. And then the ref wouldn't give points. And then somebody would go, well, there's not points because of this. And they would like name some like real specific thing. And it was actually funny because at one point, Ryan Aiken was sitting right in front of us. And he and Nick, who, you know, the purple belt that competed from our team, were like, and then there were me and a couple of other guys. We kind of disagreed on a point scoring situation. We did that a couple of times. And one time, they were right and we were wrong. But then another time, they were wrong and we were right. And it's like, man, we're talking about people like, again, a couple athletes that competed, a couple of guys that have been training a decade plus, a couple of guys that, again, are certified, have ADCC referee or judging or scoring, point scoring certificates. Like, they went through the training, and none of us still can agree on what's points and not points. And there were a couple of matches in particular, the biggest being in the final. We're talking about the ADCC finals of the under 99 kilogram division. You have Adam Bradley going against Michael Pixley. And with 30 seconds left in the match, Adam Bradley swept. He got Michael Pixley in the waiter sweep position. He swept Michael Pixley with the waiter sweep and should have gotten 2 points. I thought that he should have got 2 points. Most people thought he should have got 2 points. And the crazy thing is the person that is the head judge, head referee, head of it all, Jay Regobuto. He was commentating. It was he and what's his name? Oh my God, why am I blanking on his name? Anyways, doesn't matter. But he was one of the commentators. And he was going, oh, Adam Bradley just scored. That's 2 points. That should be 2 points. And then he was like, wait, why aren't they giving him 2 points? That's 2 points. Like, he is the head of the Rules Association. He is the one that trains people. And he is supposed to be the most knowledgeable person about ADCC rules. And he's on the live broadcast as the announcer going, oh, there's 2 points. Adam Bradley just won. He's going to win ADCC gold. He scored with 20 seconds left. And they don't give him the points. It just completely left all of us like flabbergasted. I mean, I remember the whole crowd going 2-2 and everybody was furious. They're like, why? And then Michael Pixley ended up winning in overtime. And the crazy thing is Michael Pixley took zero. He's this like national champion, All-American. He took zero shots in a 4-minute overtime. Adam Bradley was the one that took all the shots. And they ended up giving the decision to Michael Pixley. It was just awful. Absolutely. I felt so bad for Adam Bradley. I'm not the biggest Adam Bradley. I mean, I don't know the guy, but I'm not like, oh man, Adam Bradley. Like, I know he's one of my homies or I love watching his style. Like, no, I didn't care either way. I don't care for either Pixley or Bradley. I don't know either of them and don't watch either of them. Haven't watched either of them grapple very much, but Adam Bradley was so clearly robbed to me. I mean, it was just awful. And now Adam Bradley doesn't have a spot at ADCC, isn't guaranteed to go, and lost out on that opportunity. He had a great run. He ended up beating Kyle Bame in the semifinals. But, yeah, he got that stolen from him. Another match, Alex Enriquez versus, who was it? I think it was Natalie Dugan. Yeah, Natalie Dugan. And they had a match. And Natalie Dugan, same exact situation. She swept Alex Enriquez with, like, 30 seconds left in the match. But this time, the referee called for 2 points, and they put 2 points up on the monitor. So she was winning 2-0. And then for whatever reason, right when the match ended, they all talked up, and then they took the points away. And her coach was furious. He was freaking out. Alex Enriquez's coach was obviously arguing for, you know, like that it wasn't points. They have like a 10-plus minute intermission where they're just arguing about this, where the refs are talking about it. I don't know. To me, it was clear as day that Alex Enriquez lost that match. I thought 100%. Again, I have watched hundreds of ADCC matches. Millions is obviously exaggerating, but I've watched hundreds of ADCC matches. I've been doing jiu-jitsu for 14 years. I live this life, you know, like I feel like I know what a sweep is. And that was clearly a sweep. And obviously they gave her 2 points. They thought it was 2. I don't know what happened. Maybe there was some favoritism. I don't know what was going on, but essentially I took the points away. 12 minutes later, I felt bad for both athletes because now they're cold. They just literally were just sitting there standing like it went on for probably 15 minutes. Well, they ended up going into overtime. Alex pretty much immediately takes this girl down, takes her back, and chokes her in overtime. But I'm pretty sure she lost. Those were the two big ones, but there were so many others. And then there's just times where you're like, how come this guy got calls for stalling and that guy didn't? There's just so much human judgment and just like human error at play here. And I don't know. They need to change some things. I think it probably needs to just be a little bit easier to score. Just so there's not as much like, I just feel like the judges can kind of determine because it is so like, well, is 50% of his body or 75% of his body up or is he this or that? Like, I think there just needs to be clearer rules to a score, you know, because I feel like with how kind of hard it is to decipher the rules, that like it just leaves these guys like they really can make these big judgments and it's easy for them to go, well, actually that's not a score, that is a score, and they can argue one way or the other because I just don't feel like the rules are clearly defined. And It's so funny. Like I said, I'm hearing all these people argue or talking about the rules, and they're all like, I've studied. All of these people are like, I've been studying the rules. I've been studying the rules, and nobody knows what's going on. Half the people, again, will argue for this way, the other half for that way. It just doesn't make sense, you know? I think in like the NBA and stuff, you have some pretty clear parameters to what a foul is. And yes, there are times the referees miss calls, but I feel like every NBA fan, like a true NBA fan, understands the rules, right? I understand, like when I'm watching, I understand the rules. And it's pretty rare that I'm like, oh my God, like this completely makes no sense, right? And especially now, coaches can challenge. So if they do, the refs do miss a call, well, you just challenge the call and they'll overturn it. And so I feel like ADCC needs something like that. There needs to be like a, hey, I get one challenge per match. I'm going to challenge this call. This should have been points or this shouldn't have been points. So ADCC, it's funny. It was a great weekend. Congrats to everybody that competed. It was cool to like catch up with a lot of people. Now it's funny. I do have one pretty funny story. So Saturday night we go out to dinner and there's 10 of us eating and lo and behold, Big Dan shows up. So Big Dan Montesayu comes and has dinner with us. Big Dan, for those of you that don't know, is, in my opinion, the scariest grappler in the world. Of all the grapplers competing right now, Big Dan is the last guy I would want to have a match with. He's like 6'8", 300 pounds, and he's incredibly technical. I've seen him rip people's limbs off their body. He's broken a couple of guys' legs super bad. Like, he is just the last guy I would want to put my body, on the line. Like, hey, I gotta like go win this match for my team or my family or whatever. And then they throw Big Dan out there. I'd be like, oh God, like this could go very, very badly. And so yeah, Big Dan sits down at our table and he has dinner with us. Really nice guy. I had a couple of great conversations with him. But anyways, I say all that to say, we're at dinner and this guy, we're about 30 minutes in and our food hasn't even come yet. Everybody's just ordered. And this guy comes up to our table and he slams his fist down on it. And so it's me and Big Dan and his girlfriend and then Zoltan Bathory. He's the drummer. Maybe he's the guitar player. I don't know. He's a part of Five Finger Death Punch. Anyways, he was at the table as well. And it was just like us four right there. And then there were other people there, but it was like us four at this one table, and this guy came up out of nowhere and just pounded his fists on our table, and he just goes off, and I thought it was a joke at first. He was like, hey, you pieces of white trash, these people here don't need your help defending them. There's nothing you can do to protect them, you pieces of shit. It was something along those lines. And I started to laugh because I didn't know if he was like somebody from the event or just knew somebody there. Maybe he knew Big Dan. I don't know. But anyways, he immediately ran out. And I was like, what in the world just happened? And the owner comes up to us and like apologized and was like, this guy's drunk. And I guess he almost got in a fight with a guy at the bar at this place we were eating. And I don't know why he came over and picked our table, but I just thought it was so funny. The one time this happens to me where somebody like comes and gets kind of physical and just it's kind of showing that he could potentially be a threat or be somebody that would want to fight or try to harm somebody like myself or somebody at my table, happens to be the one time that Big Dan is eating with me. And it was funny because people were like, Nakia was there. She was eating at the other side, like at the far end of the table. And people were like, oh, well, we would have just sent Nakia out there to beat him up. I'm like, no. We would have sent Big Dan. Like, he's 6'8", 300. Why? Like, that's the... we're not sending anybody else. I'm not doing anything. None of these people are like Big Dan. Number one, he was the closest guy to that guy. But two, he's 6'8", killing machine. And it was just really funny though, because yeah, they were like, man, we'll just send like Nakia. And I was like, no. Big Dan, like, we nominate you. Like, if this guy comes back, you're going to handle it, you know? But anyways, it was a good time, and it was just a funny story. I just can't believe, of all the times in my life, I mean, I'm 34 years old, and I've eaten out a million times. It's never happened to me, and the one time it does, in my opinion, the scariest guy in grappling happened to be sitting at my table. And so I definitely wasn't worried at all about, you know, if that guy came back, because I was like, man, I think Big Dan could probably take four of those guys. PGF is coming up. Last thing I want to talk about is PGF. I gave you guys my rankings last time, and I feel pretty good about them still. I think I might want to bump Elijah Carlton up a couple of spots. I think Elijah, he's just such a dark horse, and he's a guy that has so much experience. I have him rated a few spots below Davis Asari, even though they're 1-1, and I rewatched that match, and Elijah actually posted a clip of him. Like, Elijah almost broke Davis's leg again. Elijah has a lot of confidence going in. Elijah, I think I gotta put Elijah over Davis. Now, Andy Varela had a phenomenal weekend. He placed third, but the thing that he did that impressed, I think, everybody there, I mean, he put Max Hansen out. He passed Max Hansen's guard, took his back, and rear naked choked him and made it look easy. I'm fully convinced he and PJ are 1-2, and I still feel really confident about Max. Like, he's going to have a good season. He had a great run. I mean, he made it to the third place match, so semifinals of the biggest bracket in the world, and he did pretty good. But Andy smoked Max, smoked John Combs. He and PJ are 1-2. And man, part of me wants to change the ranking and put Andy above PJ. Andy's just such a dog. He's got such a chip on his shoulder. He's willing to he's just a fighter. He's one of those guys. He's not like a jiu-jitsu. He's a fighter. And I'm super excited to see how he does. Cam Hurd killed it. I know I have Cam Hurd ranked last. I know that upsets him, and I'm sure it upsets a lot of people. Like, from his fan base. He did get a submission. He got an armbar from the closed guard, but I still just don't see Cam getting very many victories. I just still don't see it. I think if this was an ADCC rules format, of course Cam's ranked way higher. I think he could beat a lot of these dudes. But I still am not sold on Cam in this format. But is 20... is that too low? Maybe. I don't know. But I do think this season we're going to see a couple of guys score 0 points. I think there's going to be a pretty big, and I told you guys, a pretty big gap between the top 10 and the bottom 10. Just on paper, when I look at it, the top 10 guys look to be head and shoulders above the bottom 10. We'll see. Until next time, guys, I love and appreciate you. Peace.